It is now time for a newcomer ask. Now, we put this box in the back of the room along with some 3x5 cards and some pencils. What we'd like to have people do is, if you have a question about the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, you write the question down on the card, put it in this slot here, and we select the question each week to be answered using AA-approved literature and our own panel of semi-experts. This week's question is there any meeting where couples go only together? We took a group conference on this, used all the experience we had in our group, and there is not such a meeting. You can't go to your master list of AA meetings and find a couples only meeting. It was mentioned that there were informal meetings of couples in recovery. They're not on the list, and how you find such a meeting would just be word of mouth. There's couples retreats for couples in recovery, but there are no formal meetings, no formal AA meetings for couples only. Now, let me pull this group. Does anybody in our group tonight know of any formal or informal AA meetings for couples? You, up in the front, young man. You want to share? Hey, Rick.
In 1995, my wife and I were part of a couple group starting in Orange County, Riverside County, and very much did it occasionally, however, but it is probably a meaningful evening all of us.
Beautiful. Thank you, Rick. Gentlemen, it is now time for our featured speaker of the evening. This is brought to you by the Valley Group of Alcoholics Anonymous, the undefeated, undisputed king of speaker meetings. This event is brought to you for your sobriety pleasure. And now, let's get ready for recovery. Our speaker has been a sober member since 12/29 of 86. She has been a member of groups in San Pedro, Oakhurst, and Visalia. She has been in service as a board member of the House of Hope, a secretary, and sponsor. Her AA motto is, quite simply, acceptance. And now, with all the earnestness at your command, will you welcome, please, from Visalia, California, Anna M.
Needless to say, my name is Anna and I am an alcoholic. And I am so terribly nervous, I cannot tell you. I'm going to get rid of a little housekeeping to start with, and I'm going to thank the Valley Group for inviting me here. They confirmed me on Monday. And at the end of the conversation, I told Bill, and he said, I'll be anxious to hear you. And I said, so will I. A little bit of housekeeping. I've been sober since December 29th of 1986. I've had two husbands. One was in sobriety, one was not. I had a cohabitated early in my youth. I have two grown children that are both married, and I have five grandchildren. I was born and raised in Southern California. I moved to the Oakhurst area in 1999 with then my second husband, who was also in recovery. And I'm going to start, I think. I'm going to just ask your forgiveness a little bit because I am going to read something because it means a lot to me and I've carried it around for a long time. If I can remember where it starts. Okay, where does booze fit into your life? You say you're a social drinker, that you can take it or leave it, but you do take a belt when you're by yourself down in the dumps, does a drink help when you have an unpleasant task to perform and you need a little extra courage? Do you go for the bottle and take a few belts and pop a mint into your mouth before you leave the house? If you see yourself up there, you've got a problem, Mr. or Mrs. or Ms. or Junior. Alcohol is not a disease strictly for adults. Children can be alcoholics too. So let this be the year you learn to live without booze. Cutting back won't work. The only way to quit drinking is to admit you can't handle alcohol and be smart enough to know there is no way to compromise. Very few people can do it alone. Alcoholics Anonymous is there to help you. It's listed in the phone book and it's free. There are chapters all over the world. AA has succeeded after everything else has failed. Trust me. This was an article that was written in our local San Pedro paper, the Daily Breeze, and it was dated January 1st, 1987, and that was approximately 3 days after I took my last drink. Because of that 25 years, I have over 9,200 and some odd days, and I can honestly... And as I pondered on it today, all I have is today, and all I have is a day of reprieve from drinking. I came to Visalia in November, and God definitely put me in this place, and God definitely put me in the rooms of the Visalia groups. He definitely gave me a sponsor that, although we've only had contact for about 2.5 months, I dearly love. And through her help, wondrous things and some of those promises only halfway through are coming true to me. In doing my course over this last few weeks, I did a lot of skimping in my recovery and in my 25 years. And I'm going to tell you it's about a 50-50 deal. And basically what I want to tell you, and basically this is my opinion and my opinion only, I'm really sorry that I did that because I missed out on a lot and I'm beginning to know that. I have found out, and starting in early childhood, and I'll go back to where I came from, my mother and father were married in World War II, and I was the first of four children. I am their oldest, or was their oldest. Mom and Dad lived a meager little life in Hawthorne, California. And what I can remember of that, Mom was a beautician, Dad was a CPA and an accountant. And I don't think we had a lot of money. My dad used to tell me with $200, the house payment was $60, and he didn't know how he made it. He remembers, you know, a couple of pairs of underwear and a couple of pairs of socks in the drawer. I can remember my mother out in the backyard doing a lot of canning, a lot of gardening. We had the incinerator out in the backyard. I'm going to age myself a little bit. We had the Ringer washing machine in the backyard. But every summer, it never failed. We got to take those vacations. And I spent a lot of my vacation time in the Eastern Sierras, a little teardrop trailer that my dad always told me he built a little shelf on it, you know, for his little animals. My dad taught me how to fish, and I love to fish. I'm an adamant fisherman. I'm really tenacious about my fishing. So if there's any fishermen here, if you want to take me on, you're more than welcome. I was around six and a half years old, and an addition was made to the family, and that's my sister. My sister is just about 6 years younger than I am. And I have come to find out that I didn't like my sister from the get-go, and that's just the fact of life. She whiny. She wanted what she wanted and when she wanted it. And also she took the attention of my mom and dad away from me. Probably my very first resentment in life. And I'd like to say that I have cleared of that resentment, but it's still hanging out, but we might get to that later on. Okay, so this came into the picture. Our family is growing. get into school. And here's another little story in my deal. I was raised in the Catholic Church, but I was never baptized Catholic. I got in this Catholic school because my grandmother worked for the nuns and the priests. And, of course, they wouldn't baptize me then because Mom and Dad hadn't been married in the Catholic Church. First resentment. I remember now going and standing in line, and they were all practicing for communion. But I didn't get to participate in that. You know, I got another resentment. My mother decides that I should have piano lessons, and I'm in the piano room while the rest of the kids are playing. So that's all come to light to me. In about the fifth grade, we moved out of our little home in Hawthorne, California. We moved up to an area called Rancho Palos Verdes. And just by its name, it's on the ocean. There's big homes. There's luxury. Out of my element. That was the first time I'd really gotten plunked out of my element. And I was with kids that could afford the cashmere sweaters. I was with kids that had everything they wanted in life. And my mother was still a stay-at-home mom, and my dad was still an accountant, no matter how you looked at it, and there was a budget. In the process of this, and I skipped over, my sister was about a year and a half old, and my mother was stricken with polio. And my mother was taken from the house. And she was in Orange County in an area called Rancho Los Amigos. And she was put into an iron lung. And in her leaving the home for probably about 2 years, I was integrated with grandmothers and housekeepers. And I became mom. I became the surrogate mom because my sister was about a year and a half. So we got another resentment. And at that particular time, and I have come to realize that that's where it all started. Because of my nature, I would just say, okay, if this is the way it's supposed to be, then this is the way it's supposed to be. We'll take it, we'll get hit on the chin with it, we'll get hit over the head with it, but we'll move on. Just move on, because you're resilient, you're a big girl, you're strong, and you've been told that. So we get up to Palos Verdes, and my mother continued to be basically an invalid. She worked her way up, got to come home. She went from wheelchair to crutches to canes, but she was never really able to participate in what normal moms would do. You know, she'd make my clothes and she'd help me get ready for a party. But as far as really being there for me, it was a little hit and miss. Dad at this particular time is succeeding in business. He's away from the house a little bit more, and life goes on. I'm involved with all of these hoity-toities and Rancho Palos Verdes, and losing my identity is where I was at. I got to the point that being funny or being out there or just doing crazy things was the fun part in life, and that got me in with everyone else. When I left school, when I left the eighth grade, they didn't have a high school in Rancho Palos Verdes. They hadn't gotten around to that. So they decided that all of the kids from the hill should be transported down the hill. And down the hill was to an area called Harbor City in Lameda. And I was kind of sort of back in my element again, but I'd gotten used to where I was at, and this was a whole group of new people. This was Hispanics, and this was, and I don't mean to center anybody out here, this was the blacks, and this was an area that I was totally unfamiliar with, and I hate to say that. Today, there's a gentleman in the audience here, and we have an ongoing joke about him being black, and I love him to death. So get through ninth grade, and I'm discovering boys, you know, and boys are kind of neat, and I know how to be pretty cute, you know, to get the boys. And just a little add-on to this, I don't do very well in relationships, so... I get into about the 10th grade, and I've gone on to high school, and I get my first boyfriend. And wow, that's really neat. Up until that time, there was a point in my life that I did kind of fake it. Somewhere along the line, I got one of those great big rings and wore it around my neck and just told everybody he was out of town. You know, this was my, I don't know where I got the ring. But anyway, 10th grade, I had my first boyfriend. And when another guy took a look at me, I got rid of him and got a new boyfriend. And when another guy looked at me, I got rid of him and got the new boyfriend. And I'm about 16 years old by this time. And my very first experience with drinking came with that boyfriend at the age of 16. Had a drive-in in San Pedro, and we went to the drive-in one night, and it was Slow Gin and 7-Up. Now, I would have claimed up until maybe about a month ago that that's where my alcoholism kicked in, but actually I think it was just the Slow Gin and the 7-Up. Anybody get sick on that stuff. I did drink in and out of high school, but I managed to get through high school, and in my very last year I was plunked back up to Rancho Palos Verdes. It ended up to be the first graduating class of the kids out of Rancho Palos Verdes. We had no senior rules. We didn't have a senior park. We didn't have tradition. We didn't have anything. And one more time, I felt on the outside. A lot of those kids had not gone down to the La Mita Harbor City schools. They had gone to the private schools that were in and around Rancho Palos Verdes, and here we are, all put back together again. I remember our senior party was at Disneyland, and of course I was the one that smuggled in the bottle of whatever. Now, I don't remember, we had a lot of parties, and I don't really recall a lot of drinking at those parties for some reason. So that's how I qualify a little bit that my alcoholism hadn't kicked in. I do remember on my 16th birthday, my parents taking me to a restaurant downtown San Pedro. I remember my dad looking across the table at me, and he just said, you know you're going to drink. So if you're going to drink, you need to drink the good stuff. Stick with the Smirnoff and the VO and the Cutty Sark. And I never liked gin, so I didn't worry about the gin. So I did. I stayed with all the good stuff because that was safer that way. I've moved out. I'm in high school, graduated from high school. That summer, my dad put me to work in a bank near his job because that's what people did when you had to support yourself and take care of your car and put gas in it. And that summer, my mother was stricken with cancer. She had breast cancer, and she had a mastectomy, and she had radiation. And one more time, she was taken away from me. I went to business school that fall, and I just couldn't concentrate on anything. And So I quit business school, and I decided to go to the junior college that was in Harbor City. And that was just kind of a joke. That was like going back to kindergarten again. I'd already learned how to type, and I didn't need to play tennis. I needed a career. And I didn't know where that career was going to go. Back when I was in school or I was in junior college, it didn't seem like the girls got much college education unless they had really stated what they were going to do. So I just goofed around at that. I spent a lot of time. That's when probably my drinking increased. That's when it took off. That's when I was able to have a car. That's when us girls used to get together and party. That's when we used to go down to Colorado River and party. I was usually the driver because I had the better car. Now I have a lot of girlfriends I'm still in touch with. We all drank together, but I ended up to be the only one coming to AA and alcoholic. I don't quite understand that, but that's okay. And there I went. So I dropped out of this business college. I went to Harvard College. I was goofing around. My mother got sick one more time, and it ended up that she had liver cancer, and it ended up that after 6 months, she passed away of cancer. Now I'm 18 years old. During this time, you know, I've been the surrogate mom because I had to be there to take care of my sister. Now she's gone, and now I'm faced basically with a household. One more time, I take on the duties. I go, okay, if that's what I'm supposed to do, I'll do the cooking and the ironing and the partying and the whatever because I'm the big girl and I'm the adult. My dad got remarried within a year after my mother's death. And I got to tell you, that was some freedom that I was looking for. I was gone. I didn't have to take care of the sister anymore. I didn't have to take care of the house anymore. He had a wife, except she did have a baby right away, so I was a little bit into that. But I was able, I had my freedom. I finally had my freedom. Within a couple of years after that, my dad put me to work in his, where he was working. And that's where I met him. I was 20 years old. I was 20 years old. He was 12 years older than I was. I was already working in the adult world, underage. I was able to go to the big parties, to the bowling leagues, to the bars, to the Friday afternoons. And then I had this gentleman who was 12 years older than I am. So I am an adult, and I am on. It's a go. This is a gentleman that I live with for 3.5 years. It ends up to be an abusive relationship, both verbally and physically. And the one thing about the relationship, there was a lot of drinking involved, but there was a lot of fun and there was a lot of highlights. There was nice homes. I lived in Newport Beach at one time, and I heard someone talk about Newport, that the party started on Friday and didn't end until Sunday, and that was very, very true. That's what happened. The biggest problem there is that he wasn't going to settle for just one woman, and he was out having a good time. I'd wake up in the middle of the night, and he'd be gone. And his claim was he was out walking the dog, except he was gone and the dog was in the house. So, and this was also a time that I got introduced to those funny little pills that start with a V, Valium. So I was comboing booze and Valium, and I do remember one night hanging out a balcony and maybe taking a dip into Newport Bay. I ended up leaving that gentleman. I ended up going back home. I ended up having to get a job. I had been working, but I ended up having to go out on my own and get a job. I got an apartment, and this was the first time I was living alone. And I go to work, and I come home, and my resolve was booze. And this is when I started drinking, and I started drinking very heavily. I found the local bars, and I was able to go out on a Friday night. I found the gentlemen in the local bars. I found the people that I was working with and around in the local bars. And I was one of those that woke up sometimes not knowing who you were. You know, that coyote ugly next to me, or just not knowing how I got there. I got married about 3 years after that, and it was definitely under alcohol. We met in a, I was living with some girls in Hermosa Beach. We had a party. He showed up at the party and he kind of just never went home. I got pregnant, had a miscarriage, but by this time we were all already planning the marriage. So, it was it was a quick courtship, December to June. And we got married in June, and off we go on our merry way. And my first child was born a year after that. My second child was born 3 years after that. And just about the only way that I could tolerate him by the end of the marriage was I was pretty much drunk 24/7. If not, I was asleep. And we did have some good times, and I cannot say that, but I lived in a nice house. I drove a nice car. We had our own business. I had all of the amenities that anyone could want, except I was not happy, and I was miserable. And I had turned in, and I believe at that particular point I had crossed the line, and I definitely had gone alcoholic, because there was no day in my life that I did not think about getting up in the morning and not having a drink. You know, my main goal in life was to give my kids a good education, and I put them in Catholic school. And as vividly as I stand here today, I can remember one morning taking them to school, and we're talking about a little about 8 o'clock in the morning, and having to stop at Vaughn's Market to buy a bottle of booze because I figured I drank too much the night before, and the husband was marking the bottles. And as I stand in the liquor store I'm deciding whether I get a half pint, a pint, or a fifth, because I really didn't know how much I drank, but I know I needed to fill it back up again. And this man came up and tapped me on the shoulder, and he says, you know, if I were you, I'd go ahead and get the fifth. It's a bigger, better buy. So I did. And I went home, and I refilled the bottle to what I thought was the right level. I had leftovers, so I put it under the sink, so I didn't have to do that again. I had booze in my at my workplace. It used to be that by 5 o'clock in the afternoon that us girls in the office, I had a travel agency, we'd start drinking wine to celebrate the end of our hard-working day. But I'd already been drinking since noon because I had a vodka bottle in the back room in the storage. So by the time I got home, I was halfway there. We have no relationship at this time. He's probably out doing his thing, and as a travel agent, I was able to take free trips here, there, and everywhere to Hawaii, to Germany, to England, and under the guise of alcohol, they're usually with the man at the other end of that trip. It was kind of like magnetism, you know, come to me, you're going to take care of me, and I'm going to take care of you, and you're going to make me feel better. And I go home with a little bit of remorse, and I just do mean a little bit, and it would happen the next time around. It was Christmas of 1989, and I want to get out of this drunkalog. Christmas of 1989, we had a cabin up in Big Bear, and we decided to go up to Big Bear and spend Christmas because it had snowed. And we packed up all of our Christmas belongings and went up to that cabin. And we spent a week up there, and we celebrated Christmas with the kids and his mother. He came home because he had to go to work. And I had to stay to clean up the cabin because we had renters coming from New Year's. So I packed up the kids and mom and cleaned up the cabin and came on home. And I was putting everything away. And I took mom home. And by the end of the day, he calls me and he goes, well, we're having a nice dinner tonight. We're having mom for dinner. And I'm going, we just spent a week with the lady. Is it really necessary? She came for dinner, but by the time she got there, because I was cooking with wine that night, I was pretty well done for, toasted. I drank more wine than went into the food. We got in an argument at the dinner table, and the argument was with him and with her. She called me a dirty, lousy German drunk. Can you imagine that? Dirty, lousy German drunk. So I asked him very nicely. I said, would you please take her and yourself and get out? And I can't use the other word, but it was out. Now, I can't tell you what happened, but there was the biggest relief you ever wanted to feel in your life. I walked into my den, turned on my television, and said, wow. It was a earth-shattering, God strike me dead. It's done for. We don't have to play this game anymore. So I sobered up right between Christmas and New Year's, which I don't really advise anybody to do. It's really rough. And I hung in there. And there was a particular day, we had a full bar at our house because I had an account with a liquor store, so there was never a lack of booze except when I drank too much of it. And this particular day, I'm going up to my parents' house, and the vodka bottle was sitting there, and I took a hit off of the vodka bottle. This was December 28th. I took a slug, and that was my last drink. I wasn't even drunk when I quit drinking. And I went up to my parents' house. The next day, the husband comes and starts cleaning out his clothes. And I'm going, wow, we haven't even talked about this. And I'm going, you know what? This is inevitable. There's going to be a divorce, and it's not going to be a fun divorce. It's going to be a nasty divorce. So if there's going to be a divorce, I have to have all of my faculties. By this time, I know I have to have my faculties. And I've got to not drink anymore because this is really messing with my life. So that was my last drink. I hung in there, and I mean literally hung in there, and I even went through this part about Alcoholics Anonymous. Now, I wasn't your ordinary drunk on the streets living out of trash cans, you know, and pushing carts. So Alcoholics Anonymous kind of didn't set well with me. I wasn't ready to go there. But I was about 10 days without a drink, and I was sitting in my office, And I picked up the phone book and I looked under A, alcoholism. I knew that there must be something that I need to get to. And then I said, well, I haven't got any money. How am I going to go to some hoity-toity chemical whatever? I pulled out a card in my wallet that was from Kaiser Hospital, and it said Alcohol and Drug Recovery Center. I said, okay, I'll give them a call. I can remember this vividly. It was Wednesday, and I called him up, and he says, well, we got an orientation at 1 o'clock if you want to come on over. And I said, well, I'm really busy today, so maybe I'll try to make it next week. So anyway, I went to that outpatient recovery. I admitted myself to it. I went on a daily basis. I was probably about 9 months into that outpatient, and my counselor at that time, he was, as he claimed, a New York dope fiend, and he believed very heavily in socializing in your sobriety. We were all out there drinking and having a good time, and we were socializing, but now we need to learn how to socialize as sober people, and he was very big on that. He would take his roots, and he would force us into going out to coffee, going out to meals, participating in house Christmas parties, whatever it was. And he told me that my very, very best friend, I was going to have this friend, but it was a little bit not up my alley because she was a heroin addict. She was a dope fiend. And, excuse me, one more time. And I thought, we don't have anything in common. But I have to tell you today that that woman is in Duluth, Minnesota. This is 25 years later. She's going through a lot of stuff with her family, and I'm able to be there for her because we ended up to be sisters and we ended up to be best friends. There's never a time that I don't pick up the phone that she isn't going through something and I'm not going through something. And right now she's going through the death of her sister, who was her surrogate mother, and she's hurting. And I was there for her. I got introduced to AA through this particular outpatient program. They took about 6 of us, and we decided that we'd all get together on a cold winter's night and go to the Alano Club in San Pedro. And if you're from San Pedro, you'll remember the Alano Club down in Pacific. You went into the parking lot, through the back alley, by the trash cans, and the back door. And that's how you got there. And I remember walking into that place, and that particular night it was cold, so I had on all my finer, warm gear, looking good, you know, the boots and the Burberry raincoat and everything else. And I remember walking in there, and there were couches, and there were drunks. You could cut it with a knife, the smoke. And I kind of took a second look and decided, you know, I don't know if you guys have what I have, what I want. You know, I'm almost positive you don't have what I need and what I want. And I did stick it out through that meeting, but I don't remember anything that transpired. Next meeting I went to was a big speaker meeting in San Pedro, and they used to have it on Saturday nights. And probably take another fourth, you know, another 100 people that was in this room. And they had speakers from all over Los Angeles and the big hoity-toity speakers. That particular meeting, the very first one that I went into, a guy was taking a cake, and he was taking an 11-year cake. And I knew the gentleman. He used to sit in front of me in the bleachers where our kids played football together. And he was taking 11 years, and I said, you've got to be kidding me. I said, you're a member of this organization? He goes, yeah. He happens to be one of the largest interventionists in the world. He goes all over the world. But here I've been sitting behind him in the bleachers drinking booze out of the thermos bottle on a cold night. He probably couldn't wait till I got there. And I had a lot of what they call them, angels, gurus in my life. You know, there was that guy who I knew. There was the guy that sold cars that I found out was in AA, and he'd keep track of me. I was 6 months sober when they decided that I should be the secretary of that meeting because I didn't sit in the back anymore, and I sat up front, and I started participating. And they told me right after I became secretary, well, yeah, we have to change these 200 people to another facility, but you know, no problem. Where do you put 200 people on a Saturday night? But it all came to light. I got really active in AA at about that point. I was about a year sober, though, and my ex-husband and I at that time were trying to reconcile, and we went through a Christmas, and I do remember after that Christmas, he left and he took his kids, and that aloneness came in again. Here I was faced with me. Here I was miserable. In actuality, I was active in AA, but I wasn't doing AA. I wasn't doing program. I had miscellaneous sponsors. I had the lady that was on Near Beer, you know. Then somebody recommended that I should go to this psychologist. Well, she didn't know what, you know, alcohol was all about. There was another woman, and nicest woman in the whole world, but she wasn't doing the program either. So that particular night, and it was like the day after Christmas again, I'm downtown San Pedro, where I really never wanted to go, and I walked into the front door of a men's recovery house because that's where they had meetings. They had the Christmas tree up, and it was like somebody told me, "You're home. You've made it. This is where you need to be." And again, that kick-started, you know, my program. Now, I'd like to say that it all went well and good from there on. I got involved. I participated in the women's recovery houses. We had functions, and we'd go to meetings there. I helped with the men's recovery. This is where I met my second husband, Boy Meets Girl, on AA campus. I used to go to the car wash until finally I took him home one day. And that put me, again, you know, instant, I love you, and we're going to get married, and everything's going to be great, and it's going to be even better because we're both sober. In 1999 is when we packed up and left San Pedro, and we moved up to North Fork, and that was my opportunity to not have to work anymore because I didn't want to. This was going to be my new life, but it's only recently I realized that that was another thing that I had to swallow. I had to choke on it, and I was taken away from everything and everybody. I wasn't drinking, but I also wasn't doing program. I did have a sponsor in San Pedro, and she was the queen of sponsors, and her sponsor was the queen of sponsors. I did what I considered a four-step, and I read her a story for about 2 hours, and I remember her at the end saying, "Wow, I've never heard anything like that." But she sent me away with no further ado. It was, okay, you're done with that, and, you know, move on. I never finished anything else after that. What leads me up to today, and I'm just going to, you know, my drinking was like anybody else's, crazy stuff. But the biggest thing that I have right here is I have 25 years as a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. But I can honestly tell you it has only been over about these last 3 or 4 months that I actually have sobriety. When I spent my summer on the east side of the Sierras, and when I came home, I decided to move from Bass Lake into Oakhurst because I needed more in my life. And I have a daughter that lives in Porterville, and because of her being in Porterville, I decided to move closer, and I decided to move to Visalia. And literally, God put me in Visalia. God put me in the home that I live in today. God put me in this community. I didn't do anything about that. And I know that because there was such ease in doing it. When I got back involved in AA on a full-time basis, and I mean, we're talking about on a daily basis, I knew what I had been missing. I knew that I had scrimped. I knew that I had cheated myself. And I guess what I want to tell you, if you're a newcomer today, don't do it. Give it a chance. Give it an opportunity. Whether you're here on a court card, you fill out the card, give it that chance. If I had quit, you know, at that year when I was feeling so miserable, if I had quit at any time, I would not be your speaker tonight. Now, I went back to AA a lot in my sobriety, and later on, every time I was hurting and every time my self-will, of which I have major, took over, I was back in the rooms of AA because it relieved me of what was going on in my life for a very short period of time. When my last self-will drove me insane, put me on the merry-go-round, put me in misery and discontent, I knew I had to surrender. I had to have the willingness to finish what I had started. And I am so very, very grateful for having done that. I don't have enough gratitude. It just expounds from me. I live in a mobile home park and my backyard is a pond. Today, for the very first time in my life, I live basically by myself. I do live by myself. I've never lived with me, myself, and I before because we didn't get along very well. I literally divorced my sister and left her up there in Bass Lake to take care of herself because she needed me to be gone also. She needed to take care of herself and I needed to take care of myself. I can sit on my back desk today and I can sit there with my 12 and 12 and my big book and I can be at peace. And I've never had that peace. So again, to finish up, and I think I'm going to finish up, I'm so very, very grateful to be here. I am, again, thank you for inviting me here. It was what I needed to do. I know that definitely God was behind me all the way, because I have no idea what I said or what happened. But please, if I can just reach out to anyone and you're thinking that this is just a temporary thing, give yourself some time, you know. You don't have, well, I'm a perfect example, except mine ran on self-will. And I was very, very fortunate. I am not cured from alcoholism. And I'm just very fortunate that I didn't have to go back and drink. So thank you.